Welcome to Radio Adi Shanti. I'm Adya, and welcome to you from wherever you might be listening to or from right now. Wherever in the world you may be, whatever time of the day or night it might be. And welcome to this time where we look really, really deeply, where we inquire meditatively. By that I mean we inquire not just using mind into more mind, but to really pull our attention into the deepest part of our being. Go with our deepest questions into that really deep part of our being. And that's really what the program's dedicated to. That's what I really want to welcome you into. And I should let you know there's a number of things I want to cover this evening. Generally, I save a little time at the end of the program or the last half of the program for phone calls. I don't know if I'll have time to get to them or not. There's a little bit I want to talk about. I want to touch upon some emails. So I may or may not get to phone calls tonight. If I have time, I'll let you know and invite you to call in. But we'll see how it goes and see how much if we have enough time for that. I thought I wanted to talk or to touch on which is a really important subject. I get, you know, lots of letters and emails and questions wherever I go about this. People of no matter what spiritual persuasion they're of, no matter what path they're on, experience what I want to talk about this evening. And there's a tremendous amount of confusion around it, a lot of misunderstanding around it. And if you don't understand it, it can make it much, much harder. Now, the term that we often use nowadays that was coined by St. John of the Cross was the dark night. And I think nowadays sort of the dark night is a very common kind of experience. You know, whenever people are feeling a little blue, they'll say they're in some dark night. But the phrase was really coined and popularized by St. John of the Cross, and he used it in a very sort of specific context, and also he used it in a context that was particular to people on the sort of Christian mystical path. And St. John he sort of really had four kinds of dark night. The dark night of the senses, which he calls them, there's an active dark night of the senses and a passive dark night of the senses, and then dark night of the spirit, an active dark night and a passive dark night. Now, my intention during this program is not to get into and really explain in detail what St. John of the Cross meant by all those terms. Anybody that's interested in it can find it quite readily. Although it's not easy really to comprehend what he was saying, because he said it so many hundreds of years ago and used, even though, you know, it's translated into English, it's in a context of his day. And it's in the context of Christian mystics, basically people who had left their homes and their families and lived most, if not all, their lives in monasteries. But I have seen that there are people in spirituality definitely go through their own versions of dark nights. So my intention is not to recreate St. John's descriptions of the dark night. I'm using this term. I'm borrowing it from him because I think it's a wonderful term. It has a beauty to it. It's a poetic beauty to even the concept of dark night. When understood correctly. And I think one of the things that's important to understand about whatever the variety of dark night one might go through, that the term dark night, it's one of the misunderstandings is it's talking about something that's only negative. And that's certainly not how St. John saw it, and that's certainly not how I see it, although the dark nights often refer to some very difficult and trying times inwardly and sometimes outwardly as well, where we deal with some very difficult and powerful emotions. But there's also something underlying these phases that are very, very, very important and very – that there's actually something beautiful happening even when it doesn't feel beautiful at all. And I'll try to explain what I mean by that. So the first thing I just want everyone to have an understanding of is I'm not, even though I present this in a what might seem like a bit of a literal form and also a sort of a step 1, 2, 3, 4 kind of thing. It's not necessary. Things don't always progress, you know, that way. We each have our own sort of unique and very organic process. And so as I talk about these, don't think of them too progressively, although there is a progression to them. But just kind of get the feel of them. Nor do you have to have gone through all the dark nights. Some people will basically skip through one of them or two of them or three or all of them. So to go through some internal sort of dark night spiritual crisis is not necessarily necessary. So if you haven't had one, don't go looking for one. Don't go trying to create one. It's just that it's very, very common. I would say that probably at least 75% of the people on a serious spiritual journey are going to have their own experience of some sort of dark night or other. And most of those people are going to have more than one. They'll have a couple, two or three phases in their own spiritual maturing, their own awakening that they'll revisit sort of the experience of a dark night. But like I said, I'm not trying to describe to you what St. John of the Cross meant. I'm just borrowing his term, the dark night. And I'm going to talk about this from my observation, what I see people go through in our current day, in a contemporary sense. And also, it's also important to understand that the way that these terms were invented by St. John and developed, like I said, we're in a very specific Christian context. In a Christian context that had very much as a part of its center, its theology of a sort of a personal God and a certain separation between God and oneself. And so each, no matter what path you're on, each path has its own, it generates its own light and beauty and clarity, and it also can generate its own difficulties. So that's another reason why I'm not going to try to describe these in simply his terms, but more put them in my terms. Like I said, there's a number of dark nights that people can experience. And I think to start with, the most common question or confusion that people have is, are they in just a state of depression, or are they in a spiritual dark night? And there are some that's not always easy to tell. It's not always quickly or readily apparent, because often what's part of almost any kind of inner experience of a spiritual dark night is a sort of closing down of your sort of affective system, so your emotional energy. So if someone's, say, very depressed, those of you who've experienced depression, you know that you feel kind of energetically turned off. You don't feel high. You don't feel your emotional bandwidth becomes very, very, very narrow. It's not wide. It's very, very narrow. And it may even start to feel like there's almost no emotionality, no feeling, no movement of energy higher or lower. It can just sort of be a complete sort of barren flatness if it gets more severe. So this sort of closing down of the affective system, the energy system, the emotional system, the system of feeling is part of depression, of course, but it's also often part of the various dark nights. And that's one of the places where the confusion can come in, because how do you know if you're in a state of depression, a depression over a loss or grief or a transition in your life, or if you're experiencing depression because there is some sort of imbalance, chemical imbalance in your brain that needs to be dealt with, or are you experiencing depression because it's actually a type of depression because it's actually sort of a symptom of a spiritual dark night, you know? So one of the things, this is just speaking really, really, really broadly, that the spiritual, one of the ways a spiritual dark night differs from garden variety depression. Garden variety doesn't mean it's not severe. It can be very severe. But the one of the differences is that a spiritual dark night will have essentially to do with your spiritual life. And by that, I mean it won't necessarily be caused because of grief. It won't necessarily be caused because the way your brain is operating isn't operating to the efficiency it could be or should be, but there's something that's happening spiritually. There is often there's a type of spiritual crisis point that's being experienced. So spiritual dark night will always be in some way, some form of spiritual crisis. Early on in our spiritual lives, those spiritual crises can be experienced as quite acute, as a real crisis. And later, some of the other dark nights are the crisis experienced in a little different way. So let me just speak about a little bit of this, and it may help give some context. Now, what I think of as the first, I call it the first dark night as the dark night of the will. And the first spiritual dark night has to do with the will. And in some ways, all the dark night phases that you may experience have to do with the will. On some level or not, it's the will, which is the core base energy that ego moves on, that is ego. It's kind of the verb of ego, will. I want, I don't want. I'm trying to grasp or I'm trying to get away. These aren't just ideas I want. They're actually movements of energy and feeling and emotion. So this is your whole affective system, your whole emotional, energetic, feeling, energy system is brought into experience through will. I want or I don't want, right? So, as I said, most of the spiritual dark nights have to do at their base with will, but certainly the first spiritual dark night has to do with the will. And this is when I talk about the first spiritual dark night, the first dark night in spirituality often happens once you've committed yourself to some form of spirituality. I don't necessarily mean a particular teaching. I don't necessarily mean a particular teacher or a particular religion, although it often is the case that it falls into one of those categories. But I mean that you've really, your interest has blossomed spiritually. Your interest has blossomed and you are giving time and energy to your inner spiritual life, however that may occur for you. And for most people, their sort of spiritual blossoming, the early stages of their spiritual blossoming, are quite pleasant. It's full of interesting ideas, new experiences, sometimes new teachings, new teachers, new religions. Sometimes there's some very powerful early initiative experiences to one's spiritual life. There's sort of an initiating experience that often comes totally spontaneously, many times almost out of the blue. You have some spiritual state of rapture or expansion or unity or merging or something that can be very brief, but it initiates you into a conscious participation in your own spiritual awakening, into your own spiritual evolution. So at the beginning, there's often a certain amount of buoyancy, of lightness, of interest, of wonder, the wonder of something new and exciting and fascinating. Once you've sort of committed yourself, again, this is more internal commitment than external. But once you've actually really started to engage in that process, in your own spiritual process, in a way that's not just flippant or just sort of mild interest, but it's kind of that moment where spirituality really grabs you. It grabs you, and it's not just your curiosity, but it's sort of something inside has woken up or come to the fore. It's sort of a force that's not brought about entirely by ego. It's something beyond ego that you feel comes alive in you, presents itself within you. There's different ways that this can be experienced. But often it's fascinating. There's an excitement to it. There are sometimes different varieties of spiritual experiences that occasionally happen that are quite encouraging and sometimes even ecstatic. And then you become engaged in your whatever your spiritual quest is. And at some point, and often relatively soon, in your spiritual life, you will bump up against this your will. And that's why I call this the dark night of the will, the first dark night of the will. Because you'll start at some point, you'll start to experience your own inability, your will's inability, your ego's inability to get to where you want to get to spiritually. Sooner or later, you'll experience the ego, and of course the will, feels like, I can't do it. I can't break through. You feel that something is right in front of you or just right there within inside of you, some breakthrough. You can feel it, but you just can't seem to make anything happen. Try as you will. Maybe you meditate for hours a day, or maybe you pray or chant or sing bhajans or go to, you know, gurus or whatever you do. But at some point when you get more focused, this dark night of the will arise, and you'll experience your first real deep conscious contact with the limitations of your ego, limitations of your will. You'll experience its powerlessness. To give you an example of this, when most of my spiritual training with my teacher was in Zen. She was a Zen teacher, and in many different varieties of Zen, they actually intentionally induce this kind of dark night. Now, they don't call it a dark night. In Zen, it's often called great doubt. But you'll often be given a question. Often, you know, in Zen, they're called koans, which are questions that your mind cannot answer, that they don't have any sort of rational answer that your intellect can ever come up with. And the teacher will push you to find the right answer. And as they push you, they'll be actually inducing this sort of inner crisis, because they will have given you something that you can't solve, that your mind can't solve. And of course, when you're given this question or this koan, you will, if you're sincere, you will just start to throw yourself at it. You'll think about it, even though your teacher will tell you that thinking about it isn't going to work. You'll try to come with all variety of answers. You'll imagine it. You'll imagine scenarios. You'll imagine answers. If you're intellectual, you'll study, you know, Buddhism or whatever you're into, and you'll try to get all the right theories, and you'll present them to your teacher, you know, and whatever you come up with just gets rejected and rejected and rejected. And yet the teacher keeps exhorting you to sort of have a breakthrough to be able to solve this question. What the teachers are doing there is they're literally inducing a dark night, a dark night of what I'm calling the dark night of the will. They're inducing a crisis point. They're getting you to this place where your ego hits a dead end, a wall, and they're trying to get you there as quickly as possible. Now, other forms of spirituality, even other forms of Buddhism, don't specifically try to get you there. They're not in such a rush. Other forms of spirituality even other forms of Buddhism, other forms of Zen Buddhism, will sort of let this crisis point just develop naturally. They won't feel compelled to have to bring it about or induce it. It'll just arise, you know, when you were, your ego will feel its limitation. And when you hit that point, the point where your will, where your personal energy, your intellect, and everything you bring to bear upon your spiritual life, it feels like you can't make this breakthrough that you intuitively feel that you need to, or is right there in front of you. And this crisis point is a dark night of the will. You're experiencing the limitation of will, of wanting, of seeking, of grasping, of a will to try to break through, or the opposite, which is the will to give yourself. Maybe you're in a devotional path and you're trying to give all of yourself to God, to the divine, or to guru, whatever it is. And you can't, and if you're going that path, you just can't quite give enough. You can't give the thing that's necessary to give. And so there's another form of coming up against this dark night of the will. And when we experience this initial dark night of the will, of course, this is the point where most people, after a while of this, they will tire. And they will eventually, many of them will just go find something else to do, which means they'll switch teachers, teachings, religions. Sometimes they'll just try to throw the whole spiritual thing away altogether, and they'll get involved in, you know, the pursuit of pleasures and trying to, you know, find happiness through material means or the right relationship or whatever. So a whole lot of people will just simply try to distract themselves, try to find something that's more fun. Then there's other people who have a more sincere interest in their spiritual life, and they'll sort of keep at it. They may switch religions, like I said, or gurus or teachings or teachers or whatever, and that may or may not be helpful to some extent. Sometimes it's okay to do that, and sometimes it's not so good. But essentially, what's going on here is in this first phase is you are encountering your own egoic incapability. And so all that excitement and wonder, and many times some of those exciting, fascinating spiritual experiences that may have occurred at a certain early point, they're no longer there. You can't find them anywhere. You can't create them. They're just old, distant memories. And you try to recreate them. You wonder what's wrong. You wonder where you went, you know, where you made the wrong turn, what you're doing wrong. You know, very often people make all sorts of conclusions about why their spiritual life no longer feels good or easy. But what they don't know, what's really hard to actually know, because we're so caught up in a reaction against experiencing our own limitation, what we don't notice is that there's a way in which the intelligence of the infinite, you can call the infinite, infinite is a word I use for the Godhead, for Buddha nature, the void, call it what you want. But there's a great intelligence that's going on. And there's a way in which this great intelligence is pulling us, literally sort of weaning us away from our egoic will, our egoic devices, whether those are intellectual devices or emotional devices or your affective system or whatever you're using, your ego's using. It's a weaning you away from what you're used to using, you know. And this can be very, very difficult for some people. It tends to be difficult to the exact proportion to your resistance. You can tell someone not to resist, but that doesn't really mean they're going to stop resisting. It's at this time that a spiritual teaching that maybe suggests that we don't need to struggle that we don't need to strive, that all those egoic efforts aren't really necessary at this point to have a breakthrough, can become useful. It's where these kind of teachings of to put down your struggle and put down your striving and put down your effort can be useful. If someone hears those teachings from a very immature, egoic place, they'll just turn it into a concept, you know, of no striving, of no effort, of nothing to do, and they'll just turn into more theology in their head, but they won't really make any headway with it. With somebody that's really sincere, they might, something deep inside them might hear that invitation to stop struggling, to stop trying to break through, to let go of your own resources, to open to something else, but don't open to it without, with expectation, with waiting, with anticipation. Just purely open. Recognize, recognize what you can't do and let go of the struggle. Now, I had a PhD in spiritual struggle at this point. I had a very, very firm iron will. Will was my thing. I knew how to do will. I had been a long-time endurance athlete. If you're an endurance athlete, you learn how to use your will. You learn how to use your desire. You learn how to use your willingness to suffer and endure. And so you get a very highly developed sort of will. And I tried to bring that to bear in my pursuit of truth. And I learned the hard way after a number of years of doing this, the really hard way, that that will just simply wasn't up to the task. And that was a hard lesson to learn. No matter how highly honed the will is, no matter how good of a tool it may have been for you in your life, that in this particular area, you find it's powerless. And you either get worn out, and you let go out of pure exhaustion. That's pretty much what I did. Or you just, in a moment of despair, you just sort of, your striving just sort of breaks and you open. Or you hear a sort of teaching that just invites you to stop struggling. Just let go of all of it. Just stop all the struggle immediately. And you hear that on a very deep level. How, whichever way it goes for you, when you have stopped, when the egoic will has really been brought to a halt, then there's a breakthrough. Then there's a breakthrough. However it's been brought to a halt, at that moment, there's a breakthrough. And that breakthrough is often our first glimpse of reality. A spiritual awakening. And in this type of spiritual awakening, usually what it has to do with is if you want to visualize it, sort of you're pierced through the ego structure. If you just imagine the ego like a veil, and there is something that just pierced through the veil. And before that, your whole life, you thought you were the ego and its will and its whole experience of energy and doing and wanting and not wanting and believing and all the rest, the ego, its images, its belief system, the whole thing. And that's consciously and also unconsciously, that's who you thought you were. That was your whole sense of being, your whole sense of self. And then when you break through, and it's like you pierce through the veil. And when you pierce through the veil of ego, all of a sudden you're, as consciousness, you're not confined in ego anymore. You're not defining yourself in ego. You've pierced through it. You're on the other side, as it were. And only then do you experience that great and immense relief, great relief of finally experiencing something other than ego. Other than the confined sense of self limited by desire and attraction and repulsion and wanting and not wanting and image and I'm good and I'm bad and I'm worthy and I'm unworthy and, your whole memory that keeps supporting your sense of a fictional self and your whole belief system about your fictional self, and all of this goes to make up the ego structure. You only really know that it was false when you're not caught in it. And that experience can be quite liberating. It can be like, I've often likened it to taking off an immense weight that you did not know you were carrying. Of course, the weight was completely illusory. In other words, the ego didn't have a definitive reality. It never did define you, but you unconsciously and consciously believed in it, and so it does have a burden to it. It has a weight to it, a psychological weight, an emotional weight that's very intense. Spiritual awakening is realizing that you're not that. You're not that. You may define yourself differently. Well, you certainly will. Maybe you'll define yourself now as consciousness or spirit or awareness or divinity, but something that's inherently not without form. All ego is form, and when you pierce through it, you experience a formlessness of pure spirit, pure consciousness. Now, you can have 100 people that pierce through the ego structure quite by grace. By grace simply means that it's not brought about by you as an ego. It's brought about by you as an ego stopping and letting it happen. But you can take 100 people who their awakening is brought about by grace, which all awakening is. And for one person, that awakening will last 2 seconds. For another one, it'll last 2 months. For another one, it'll last 2 hours. For somebody else, it'll last 2 years. For somebody else, they'll never lose sight of it. For everybody, it's very different. The experience of being beyond the ego is singular. But how long it lasts, how clear it is, how complete it is, how abiding it is, all this is unpredictable. It varies, and it varies a tremendous amount. But even if you've pierced through the ego for 1 second, you know. You may not experience it, the freedom of it in its fullness all the time, but you know that ego structure does not define you. That's what you know, not through being convinced, not through a theory, not through what some teacher says, what I say, what teaching says, nothing of that, but through your own direct experience. There's a knowing, a full being kind of knowing. Now, for most people, again, not everybody, but for most people, at some point after that, that great moment of aha, and that aha can be huge aha with lots of affect, emotional byproduct, experiential byproduct, lots of ecstasy or laughing or bliss or whatever. And some people have just an aha with very little emotional byproduct, very little, if any. So the byproduct, the how big the experiential part of it is, really means nothing. It really doesn't. I've seen this over and over and over again. How overwhelmed you feel, and how free you feel, and how much big the byproducts are of to awakening, says nothing about how deep it ultimately goes, how lasting it is. It says nothing about it, except other than you've experienced a lot of experiential byproduct. Someone else may experience little, if any. It'll just be kind of a aha. And they won't have much byproduct. The byproduct doesn't say anything about the depth of the awakening. Nothing. It's just different makeups, different hookups, you know? So it's really important to understand that. Now, for most people, at some point, there will seem to be some closing back down that you pierce through the ego, and now the ego sort of has a hole in it, almost like a, I know this is silly, so pardon me, but the image, almost like a donut or a hole in the piece of paper or something. And then it seems like that hole, that aperture closes back down. And so you feel caught back in the ego. Except now you know that you're not ego, but you know it kind of more as in a memory. Once you've pierced through the ego, it's going to open back up. The aperture cannot stay closed indefinitely. It can stay closed a lot longer than you want, but not indefinitely. But oftentimes the aperture, the opening, the openness, the hole that was pierced in this veil of ego, the veil, the aperture closes somewhat, if not seemingly all the way. And often people have sort of this vacillation between being beyond ego and really caught in ego, and then beyond and then caught. And this can be very, very difficult because you have moments of great freedom. And anytime you touch into truth, it feels like you can never lose it. It feels like the most obvious thing in the world. That's just the nature of truth. You realize that it's always here. It was always here. And since it was always here, how could you possibly ever lose it? And you can never imagine how, number one, you couldn't have seen it from the very beginning, and how, number two, it just seems impossible that you would ever not see it. But that's how it always feels when you connect with the truth of being. But in the aperture may close down, and often it kind of goes back and forth for a while. And this starts to, for some people it doesn't. For most people it does for a while. Then you have sort of a second sort of a dark night of the will, which is, again, the mind and ego and self and all of it, your preference is to stay in that open place, to not be caught in the veil of the false self and ego. That's everything in you doesn't want to be caught, especially now when you know that what it's like not to be caught. And as I often say to people, for a while, the sort of spiritual tricks of the trade, there are sort of little phrases or teachings or pointers that you can hear, and they'll kind of almost be like a chiropractic adjustment for consciousness, and it'll put you back into a state of clarity. Often people find little twists of phrase that really work for them, and as long as they work, use them. But there will come a time when all those little tricks of the trade, as I call them, will one by one stop working until nothing works. And it'll open when it opens, and it'll close when it closes. And there's really nothing you can do about it. And all the tricks of the trade you use to try to open the aperture back up don't really work anymore. And at that point, you're experiencing another deeper level of a dark night of the will. Now your will, not only could it not pierce through the ego, that had to happen through grace, through the it will becoming humble and relinquishing itself. Now will, I want and I don't want, comes up in a new form. I want to stay in that state of spiritual clarity and joy and peace, and I don't want to be in that sort of condensed, aperture closed, ego space. It's not who I am, and there's this other bigger sense of being, or more free sense of being. And at some point you realize that your will cannot assure that the aperture won't close. So again, often after this great, what I call the spiritual honeymoon, you come back from the honeymoon, and there's this kind of back and forth, I got it, I lost it. And you start to encounter the will, and now at a deeper level. And of course, again, the mistakes of thinking become, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? I had this beautiful truth shown to me, given to me by grace, for nothing, for free. And here I can't even stay in touch with it. I can't even be in that space all the time. And one, then you try, and of course you can't do it because it's always, it's a movement of grace. It's not dependent on your will or your intelligence or how smart you are or bright you are. Again, for some people, they'll keep conceptualizing it in their mind, and they'll just get lost in this sort of little spiritual dream where instead of having a real sense of their truth of their being, they're actually lost in a complicated little mental construct that they made out of a moment of genuine spiritual awakening. That happens a lot. But at some point, you have to re-encounter often this another layer, level of this dark night of the will, of the ego. And this can be, for some people, you know, mildly difficult. For some people, it can be crushing, crushingly difficult. It just depends on how much resistance there is, how much you struggle against it, how much you mistake the truth of being for some of those fancy spiritual experiences. What you don't know, because it's happening unconsciously, but again, there is a movement of grace, of truth. And the movement of truth there is that you're being weaned out of a sort of a very unconscious identification with will. And with, you're being weaned away from experiences. Even the experience of wanting to be overtaken by spiritual freedom and ecstasy and all of that that may have been part of your own awakening. But you get weaned off it like a child gets weaned off of liquid onto real food bit by bit. Spiritually, we get weaned off of many of the spiritual graces that we may have received. And when we do, most of us, we really fight against it. Even if we know in our minds that we shouldn't fight against it, most human beings will fight against it. It's just such an instinct to grab on to the pleasurable, to try to hold on to the heaven you found, you see, and to feel terrible about yourself for having lost it. That's the boomerang effect. But there is something that's trying to be, there is a maturing that's taking place here, which is you're being weaned off of the experiential aspects of truth, the truth of your being. And you are in a deeper being weaned off of or away from your egoic will. So these first two dark nights have to do with your will. And they can be very, very painful. And of course, one can feel very depressed at times because your affective, your emotional, energetic system can really, and usually does, really close down. But if it's a spiritual crisis, you're being weaned away from that to something deeper, you see. You don't know it, but what's happening is you're being weaned away from your attachment to your whole energetic, emotional, affective system. You're being weaned away. It's being taken away, your attachment to it. You're finding your truth in it is being weaned away. And it's being guided towards something else. It's like I said, it's like a child being weaned away, weaned off of baby food. And so there's a deeper spiritual process. This is what distinguishes it from just simple depression. Simple depression is just, you're not necessarily being weaned off of anything. You're just feeling that sort of that just where the whole mind and energy system turns on itself, and it can have a very similar look and feel, because in real deep dark depressions, your affective system closes down also, and so there's often one can be mistaken for the other. It takes a real real examination to really have a feeling for what's going on. Usually, if it's a spiritual thing, every once in a while, you'll be given these moments of grace, and I mean moments. It can be minutes or hours, or But moments of grace, just every once in a while. Every once in a while can mean every few weeks, every few months. You know, not that often, but every once in a while there'll be a moment of some sort of grace. It's almost as if that divine intelligence kind of just, in its own way, lets you know everything's okay. But then, of course, that disappears and you think you're lost again. But there are these moments. Or for some people, there can be this very hidden but underlying sense of okayness, like it's there, but they can't really experience it deeply. It's just, they just feel that it's just there at the very foundation, at the bottom of their experience. They can't feel the okayness. They can't really, it doesn't give them relief, but they have some connection with it. Again, somebody that's in a real, a more classical depression, probably are not going to have these moments of grace that happen every once in a while. Like I said, every few weeks, days, weeks, or months, so not that often. And they're probably not going to, or they probably won't have any sense of okayness. It'll just be completely very, very, very dark, right? And if that's the case, then you really need to respond to that and to help find yourself some help, whether that's some good psychological counseling or psychiatric counseling or medical intervention or whatever. You know, I'm not an expert on, you know, real classical depression. But you know, if you're dealing with that and it's very dark and it's very, very heavy, it's not something you want to just ignore and just not pay attention to. But when there's this spiritual component, when there are all these moments that let you know, yes, not all has been lost, you know, moments of grace or maybe just an underlying sense of okayness, even though you can't really feel it or touch it, you just intuitively know it's there. These things are indicative of a spiritual process that's actually going on. And the closing down of the affective systems, the emotions, the feeling and stuff, is just, it's a symptom of a deeper spiritual process. It's a being weaned away from something we're maturing out of. So that's a very different movement than just getting caught in depression, although depression may be a part of it, what you experience. And if you really get caught in all your depressive thinking about it, you can, you know, the depressive element can become stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. So you want to keep an eye out for your mind telling yourself depressing stories and thoughts and concepts about what's unfolding. Stick to something deeper than your mind. But when that plays itself out, and that can play itself out in weeks, months, or years, it's very different for different people. As I said, a lot of it depends on your resistance and also just your sort of your karmic makeup, biological karma, psychological karma, the karma of your life, whatever. During this time also, I might mention that after a spiritual awakening, what a lot of people are surprised by is at some point afterwards, can be very soon afterwards, often it's weeks or months afterwards, maybe even a year or two. But afterwards, at some point, a lot of people are really surprised when some really deep, heavy sort of karma difficulty arises into their consciousness. They're very surprised by this because often they think, you know, that was left behind them long, long ago. But it's not at all uncommon for to be almost, you just feel like you're sometimes hit from out of the blue. You didn't see it coming, and some huge piece of difficulty sort of breaks off from your unconscious and comes floating up into your consciousness, and it can be quite wild. You know, sometimes people will experience, you know, rage or anger or, of course, great amounts of fear or you know, memories can some very, very difficult to traumatic memories may float up. But the principle here is that darkness seeks the light. That may sound trite, but it's true. What's dark, what is unconscious, what is in a state of isolation and separation and suffering, even though it recoils from the light, it recoils from being exposed, simultaneously at the same time it's also seeking the light, it's seeking release, it's seeking to, it's seeking what all beings are seeking, which is to not suffer. So it's also seeking its own release. So it's often there's this push-pull, you know, I don't want to see this and I want to see it so it can release itself. So there's, it's just not uncommon for some deep karmic patterns to present themselves after an initial awakening that comes as a surprise. And since I don't have, you know, hours and hours to talk about all this right now, I'll just say that based on the underlying thing here is you just be that conscious presence that allows whatever wants to be revealed to reveal itself. No matter how illusory you may think it is, no matter how unenlightened you may think it is, no matter how shocking it is, just you are the conscious presence in which it arises and which it finds its freedom, you see. You are the light that it's seeking. You are that space that it is. You are actually what's calling it out of its hiding, out of its repression. And the more you can realize that all this, if anything, repressed material comes up, you realize that your role really is mostly the role of just staying conscious, staying present. You don't necessarily have to analyze it or even understand it all, but to really be present. And just allow it to unfold. Allow it to unfold. And whatever, just allow it to unfold. Watch for your mind getting caught in loops of thinking, you know, storytelling. But just let it unfold and just be a real conscious presence, a loving presence in which illusion unfolds. Because it's going to unfold whether you want it to or not, whether you're running from it or not. The more you realize that you are this conscious, loving presence in which delusion and illusion and that which is not true can unfold, the easier this goes. Even though much that unfolds is not true, it's based in illusion and misunderstanding and innocence, it doesn't mean that it's not going to unfold. It doesn't mean that it's just going to disappear because you see or even know that it's quite illusory. Like I said, it disappears when there's a full, open, loving embrace of it, the consciousness of it, so it can work its way through. I know that's a lot easier said than done for some people. For some people, there's very little to be seen. For some people, there's a tremendous amount to be seen. You don't have choice in the matter. All the complaining in the world doesn't change anything. But everyone's got what they got. And if you've really had a real moment of spiritual awakening, somewhere in you, you know, and somewhere in you, you can experience that no matter what unfolds, no matter what old pattern is unfolding and releasing and presenting itself, that you're okay. It doesn't actually... I don't want to say it doesn't touch who you are because that would make it seem too distant. It doesn't destroy that loving presence. It doesn't destroy that being. It doesn't hurt it. You hurt yourself when you run from any part of yourself, even if you run from your own illusions and you cause harm, you cause difficulty. But if you really pierced your whole notion and feeling of who you thought you were into that freedom and openness of being, if you're really paying attention, it's there. It's always there. Then there's this, what I like to call the dark night of unknown, of the unknown, of not knowing. And what this has to do, this is when sort of this other dark night sort of settled, the second dark night of the will sort of settles down, then there's a more of an abiding in your own presence of being, abiding in that truth, not only in the experience of the openness and silence and simplicity of it, which is its deeper aspect, silence, openness, a profound simplicity. It's not the more mature experience of your true being is not, it's not showy. It's not causing you to be swooned in moments of bliss. That may happen still from time to time, but you mature out of your attachment to those states. And you, as you mature out of them, you're not grasping at them. You're maturing into a profound simplicity. From your ego's point of view, it's a place where there's just nothing in it for ego. The ego would say, yes, but I want more bliss, or I want more this, or I want more that, or I want to be really excited like I used to be, or I want to be swept away in moments of freedom and like I used to be. But that's ego. That's ego again, desiring its pleasurable experiences. As I said, for a while, that those byproducts may present themselves. But part of this second dark night of the will is you're being weaned away from those attachments. You're not weaned away from those experiences, because they may come and go. But you're being weaned away from your attachment. And you're kind of dying into a profound simplicity, a deep ease, and a depth that's very hard to describe. It's a depth of being that is, it's not described by these sort of ecstatic spiritual emotions. It's something deeper. There's something much more profound about it. It's not as flashy, but it's much more profound. But there's a real death, a dying into that simplicity that this dark night of the will after awakening is all about. It's a dying into something very simple and very quiet and very, very deep and profound. And for a lot of people, for most people, this is difficult for them to do, and it takes a while. In fact, most people will not do it at all. They'll just keep running. They'll keep chasing the spiritual accoutrements. They will keep eating spiritual candy when what they need is a good solid meal. Most people just, when they're asked to let go at this level, it's all unconscious, but they basically say, no, I want the flowery kind of awakening. I want to be excited and blissed out, and I want to feel like I'm just in this state of wonderful freedom. That's what I want. If I can't have that, forget it. I'm going to go look for it elsewhere. And, that's okay too. It all depends on our state of spiritual maturity or lack thereof. We all live out where we are. And it's not about right or wrong. It's about truth and where it leads us and how much we let go. And how much we want the truth, or how much do we want to be tantalized? How much do we want to be entertained? How much do we want truth? If really what we want truth, even with all of our stumbling and grasping and moments of confusion, our intention, it will lead the way. It's not what we do. It's what we intend. It's what we love. If we love truth, even though we may seem to spin our wheels for a long time, our intention wins out. That's the direction we end up to go. Then you come into this sort of, there's no longer, I got it, I lost it, I'm grasping, I'm this. You're not walking around saying, I'm an awakened person, I'm enlightened. And, you don't even feel like you need to talk about it all the time. All that sort of excitement phase has worn down, and of course it's opposite. The hellish phase has worn down and kind of worn itself out, and you're in a very much deeper, more mature place. And you're learning then to, but everything is unknown there. You see, you're relearning how to be, and I mean as a verb, how to be in this human world, talk to people, relate, go to work, raise your kids, whatever you do. What is it like to be from a very different perspective? It's another thing you let go of. You let go of the perspective you came from. You know, you let go of being a caterpillar and you realize you're a butterfly. And when you realize you're a butterfly, you realize butterflies are actually very different from caterpillars. Not like, it's not better than. Of course, as long as you think you're better than, then you have a lot of letting go to do. It's just different, very different. Your perspective is different. What moves you is different. What interests you is different. For a while, it may make you even feel separate, this difference. But as you mature, that sense of separateness will dissolve, and all that's left is difference, but no separateness. When we have a clear vision, we can see the divine in everything and everybody, no matter how clear they are or how confused they are. When we're really clear, we can see it. We know it. And so there's a way that we learn. We don't learn by somebody telling us or teaching us, but we learn very much how you learn how to ride a bike. You know, you just do it. Or you learn how to walk. You just get up and then you try and you fall down and you get up and you fall and you get up. And something in you learns. You learn how to be from a totally different perspective. And you accept certain things that to your ego may have been frightening, like, you know, you may be still trying to fit in, and you accept you don't fit in as into the same perception because you don't have it. You have a different perception. How does that fit in? See? There's lots of things I could talk about that, but I'm already taking an hour, so I don't want to get too hung up. But there is this way that your functioning becomes kind of very unknown. Because you've awoken up out of this conditioned ego structure and all of its knowing. Ego knows how it's supposed to be or how it wants to be or how things should be or how they shouldn't be or how people should be and how they should. Your ego knows all that. All that. It's all nonsense, of course. But your ego knows it. Once you've gone beyond that, you don't know anymore. And there's nothing that comes up and says, hey, here's how to do it. Here's how to do it. Here's how to do it. It's sort of a stumbling around in the dark. You're groping your way. You find your way. And yes, you can get there. Many places you can get stuck. There are many spiritual cul-de-sacs to get stuck in. You know, you can get stuck in a sort of a spiritual superiority, which is a sort of separation. You can get stuck in a sort of, you know, experiencing yourself to be this sort of emptiness, but it's an emptiness that's defended against form or against involvement or, you know, lots of ways that we can kind of get stuck or in a cul-de-sac that's probably for another program. I can go into that with much more depth. But it's a dark night. It's a dark night here, the dark night of the known. It's a dark night, not because it's necessarily difficult, although it can have its own confusion and disorientation, but it's not necessarily emotionally difficult, unless you make it so, but it's dark simply in the sense that you don't know. You don't know how to be, how to communicate, and how to relate, even though there is no other, even though you see then, if you've come this far, you really see the oneness. You really see that everything is that. Everything is the beloved. Everything. And the more you see that, the more it's harder to describe what that is. You know, at some point we call it awareness or consciousness or spirit or Buddha nature but each of these concepts have their own limitations. Everything is the beloved. Everything. Everything you see, hear, taste, touch, that's it. But if you just believe that in your mind, you might as well not believe it at all. It doesn't matter if you believe it. I'm talking about something I don't even know what to say. It's a perception. It's just a knowing. It's something that's very simple, but very deep. But that's what I mean by a dark night of the known. And not only you start to realize that you know what to do and when to do it and how to do it, you know through not knowing, which is impossible to really understand until you're there. Then you start to realize that you come to know what you need to know only when you need to know it, and only in the manner that you need to know it. It's like things just present themselves in the moment. Because if you've come this far, you're in the moment. That's all you've got is the moment. And you realize the moment is totally sufficient. It provides all the knowing you need at the moment you need it. It doesn't provide it before, and it doesn't provide it after, but it provides it in the moment. And the more you realize that, the more you, on a deeper level of letting go, and you just, there's a flow. You become that flow. I mean, you always were that flow, but now we're talking about you become it in the sense of you're realizing it. And you're realizing it, and there's a going with this flow, the movement of stillness. Yeah? That's what it really is. The movement of stillness, or the sound of silence. When you talk, it's the silence that's talking, you see. It's that wholeness and that goodness that's talking. It's not just what your mind thinks and these conditioned mind structures, even if they're really spiritual, but it's something else that speaks, that uses your speech. It's something else that can even use thought and form thoughts. So there's a way that you flow with existence because you realize you're at one with existence. You don't have this independent will anymore where it's you and life, or you in this situation, or you and, you know, that's all sort of dividing on an energetic level. But when you've come to this far, there starts to be this real harmonious flow. It's very harmonious. It usually takes years to get the hang of, by the way. To really get the hang of it. It takes years for most people. It doesn't happen just like that. I want to back up because there's something that I didn't talk about in this whole the dark night of the wills, is there's a certain point where to take in more spiritual information just becomes almost unbearable. So it's that there's a point now we're going back to the dark night of the will. This can be before and after awakening. There's sort of, it's experienced a little bit differently, but there's similarities where you, at some point you start to just be, you don't want to take in more information. You don't no longer want to read spiritual literature. You don't want to listen to things. You don't want to listen to more CDs. You don't want more prattling teachers like me, just blah, 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 talking. It just almost becomes repellent. So, you know, before it might have seemed like nectar. It might have seemed revealing, and it might have even helped a profound shift take place in you. But at another point, it just becomes like nails on a chalkboard. And so even that, even the deep teachings, whether they're, you know, Christian or Buddhist or contemporary teachers or whatever they are, it just becomes hard to take because you're, in a certain sense, you're being called to something deeper. What nourished you, which is often the teachings or the sutras or the holy books, what nourished you, you no longer find nourishment in. When you're in the dark night of the will, you look at it and why doesn't this inspire me? Last year, it inspired me. It was so uplifting and, you know, maybe even helped you see something, or it may have even helped you a part of your own awakening. But then it's just, why isn't this doing this? This is part of the affective system, the energetic, emotional system sort of shutting down. because you're being pulled into something deeper. You're being weaned off of the surface level of ego enjoyments, excitements, even spiritual enjoyments, intellectual excitements, emotional excitements. You're being weaned away. You don't know you're being weaned away because all you feel is a profound loss, the confusion, the repulsion. You just can't stand to hear another spiritual talk or whatever. But these are indications that it's time to spend some time in silence. Even though that silence may not offer you anything, even though it may not make you feel good, it may not offer your affective system, your energy and emotional system any sustenance, it's very useful to spend time in silence because that's what you're being drawn into. You're being drawn into it. You're being drawn into it, and you're also being drawn away from all of your distractions from it. And at certain points along the journey, we can actually use spiritual teachings as forms of distractions from this deep, deep silence that may feel like it's a complete desert, a complete wasteland. There can seem to be there's nothing in it for you. And yet that's because you're being weaned off of your attachment. You're being weaned off of that thing that looks at every experience and says, "What's in it for me?" This silence is boring. This silence, there's nothing here. Before, when I was in silence, it felt uplifting and blissful and or maybe just peaceful, but now there's just nothing. You can sit there and complain about that forever. You can go off to some other spiritual system, whatever it might be, and try it all over again. Or you start to realize that you're actually being weaned off of the old and we're being weaned into the new, something much more profound, much deeper, much more... It's the difference between your idea of God and God, your mind's and your ego's experience of God and God's experience of God, using theistic terms. So it's really important, once you know you're being weaned off of an old way and you're being pulled into something that you do not understand yet, you cannot even experience yet, but you're being weaned there anyway, you start to give way to it. So you start to be in that stillness, even though it's not offering you anything. Because you know inside where you're being pulled to. Most people, they just don't like it. They want to be entertained. We all want to be entertained for a long time. We all want to be excited and titillated and given knowledge and so we can feel like we're smarter than everybody else or superior or just informed or whatever. But spiritual awakening is really, at the end, it's really about degrees of silence. It's a death into stillness. And it's even a death of stillness until stillness is not even what you thought it was. It's not even stillness. A couple of programs ago, I talked about these two streams of spirituality that are always happening. One is the stream of insights and ahas and understandings, and that can be experiences and all that, these can be very profound, even moments of great spiritual breakthrough, even awakenings. So it's this level of insight and wisdom and understanding and breakthrough. And that's one level. It gets lots of press. It gets lots of stories. You know, it's very entertaining. It's lovely. It's very profound things happen. And then there's this other stream, which is very quiet and it's not flashy. But it's the disillusion, the dissolving of ego and self. And there's nothing exciting about it. It happens, for the most part, below conscious awareness for a long time. But in the end, it's that stream, that small, quiet, in many ways unknown stream of dissolving of ego and self, that's really what it's about. If all the insights and the awakenings and all of that, if these things engender dissolving, then they have served the truth. If they ultimately lead away from a dissolving, then they become in themselves distractions. If you grasp them, then they become distractions. So I know I kind of backed up, but I wanted to talk about that because a lot of people experience that, you know. This, even the spiritual things that gave them such pleasure, the teachings, the teachers, the whatever, there's a time where you just can't take it in. You don't want to take it in. You don't know what to do, and everything else feels like a desert. Well, my advice is to go into that quiet desert. Go into that place, as Meister Eckhart said, where distinction never gazed. That simple ground of silence where distinction never gazed. Where you're neither lifted up nor are you pushed down, but you're just giving everything to that. The last thing I want to just talk about here is another kind of a dark night. We've had the dark night of the will, the first dark night before awakening, the dark night of the will after, dark night of the known, which is kind of a how to function beyond the known, how to move. Then there's the dark, I don't even know what to call this other one. It's almost like, again, it also has to do with will. On some level, all of these movements have to do with will and the relinquishing of will and the letting go or waking up from will or whatever you want to put it. But there's a sort of a dark night of the, what would we call this? It's like love's longing, really. And this is of a different quality because this comes to someone who is really abiding in their true nature to the most part. For the most part, there may still be moments here or there. The ego may still at moments try to grab or, you know, do whatever egos do, but they're no longer necessarily in a state of turmoil, grasping at old moments of clarity, whatever. But there is this, it's almost like this sense of the last bit of the ego really just collapsing. And, of course, I said these aren't necessarily linear. There is like an overall linear progression, but at any moment in time you can jump forward and then back and then forward and back and, you know, at any moment, you can be dealing with something that may even be far beyond your own sort of capacity to really sustain. And in the long run, you can say, well, they kind of do unfold, you know, progressively. But at any moment, you can be at any one of these places. But this sort of the love's longing is really for just a complete and total release. This is different than sort of at the beginning where the ego in a very sort of noisy way wants to let go of itself, even though it really doesn't. This is now when things are very calmed down, when most of the struggle is pretty much over, but there's just this sense of this last little bit of ego. Last little bit. And this last little bit, actually, it's, you know, you have to watch out for the subtle things because the subtle things in the spiritual life have these immense, broad tentacles. You know, the stuff that seems really difficult and really noisy and it seems like it's overwhelming, but actually it's loud, but it's not far reaching. It feels like it's far reaching, but it's actually not. It's the subtle parts of ego that are really quiet, but really far reaching. You know, almost like a fog. And this final sort of dark night is this sort of final letting go of ego entirely, really. Again, it's any part of the ego in this. I think an easy way to understand ego is in terms of its will, its driving energy of I want and I don't want, and all the levels of subtlety that that can exist on. At a certain point, you start to get to the real bottom, the last little tentacles of that will. And yet they're very, very, very far-reaching. And when you come into that, it's a very difficult one to talk about because even though you come into it usually when you're at a very seemingly spiritually stable, open, peaceful, free place, when you start to bump into it, it can be very, very powerful because you're down at the root structure of the very root of ego, which is extraordinarily, it's a very deep place, you know. And the ego can just become terrified. You feel like you're going to die. And in a sense, you are. The illusion of your ego is going to desire its last little bit of separation, that movement of energy that's puts itself at odds with what is, for whatever the reason, any reason, doesn't matter. When you feel that letting go even coming, and you feel it coming often long before it actually comes, you often feel like some experience of fear, often just like a terror of letting go. Because it's a loss of my life. You realize that my life is not about me. It's not mine. There really isn't. You know, you can, and this happens often way beyond after you've had experience of real direct insight into knowing there isn't a me, there isn't a my, there is no me, there is no ego. There's a level of insight which is instantaneous and very profound, and then there's this other level of this dissolving, which is this, and it's also the level of being. Realization doesn't always cut to the very, very deepest part of being. You can realize something on one level but not get it on another level. What I'm talking about here is not just realizing there's no me, there's no ego, but psychologically, inside, spiritually, to the core, not just realizing that, but actually having the movement of it, the functioning of it, the raw energy of it fall into. It just sort of collapses. The center collapses of ego structure. I know I've pretty much taken the whole program with this, so there's not a lot more. I mean, I could say more because, of course, there is falling away of sort of the divine, what people think of as the divine center or the it was never really experienced as a center. It was always experienced more like a field to me. The falling away of that into, you know, into the infinite, into the dark infinite, the absolute pure potential of being, beyond being. But that's maybe for another time, another program. But when this last dark night of love's longing, of course, love's longing is to be completely one, not just unified, not just me and this, you know, me, I'm unified with the divine or I'm unified with God, but it's just a complete oneness in a certain sense. And that requires a type of death, of a letting go on a very, very deep and profound level. And, of course, it's a dark night again because you're dealing with, like I said, the last vestiges of will. And like all these phases, you can't make them happen. the will cannot make them happen. Even that little last teeny, 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 infinitesimally small bit of will, I can't make it happen. It's the relinquishing of that. But when you get to this level, the relinquishing, it's something that is very, very, it's very, very different from one's initial awakening often. It's a different experience. It's a different feeling. It's something of, it cuts much, much, much deeper. It's a letting go without reward. What I mean by that, it's a letting go without even the consideration of reward. Because if there's a consideration of a reward or what you're going to get for the letting go, then you're letting go ultimately for yourself. When you're letting go for the truth, then you're letting go for no reward, for nothing that you get out of it. Easier said than done, but nonetheless, that's this at least the dark night that I want to talk about here. It's not really the final, but it's the final one I'll talk about this evening. That's really what's happening. So, as I said, each of these I could have talked about for an hour and a half on any one of these, but I wanted to kind of cover the spectrum because I get lots of questions about this stuff. I mean, people don't write necessarily and say, I want you to talk about the dark nights, but they're talking about this state of difficulty or that state or this state of turmoil or feeling like they're in a wasteland or a spiritual desert or they can't even listen to another spiritual discourse or talk or read anymore, and yet something still is spiritually compelling them, you know. So I wanted to address these. If there is some understanding of what's being experienced, then you don't keep spinning your wheels. You kind of get what it's really, where you happen to be, what it's about, what you're being weaned off of, and what you're being called into. Now, at the very end, in the whole, when all is said and done, do you know, in a certain sense, when we get to the absolute infinite, the absolute infinite, none of this is happening, did happen, or ever will happen. But the problem is, until we've gotten to the absolute infinite, until we haven't even gotten there, I don't know how to language this. There's even though there's from that perspective, none of this is ever happening. You still got to go through it for the most part. Most people got to go through this. Whatever you call it, whether you call it an illusion or a dream consciousness that you're having or whatever you call it, it doesn't get you out of going through it. You got to dance your dance out. You can't pretend that you're somewhere that you're not. So just maybe a little understanding about what you've experienced, I hope will be helpful for some people. I hope it will be. As I like to always remind you that anytime I lay something out like this, you know, it has its danger, is that your mind will grab on too much or you know, hold it too tightly or, you know, whatever it will do with it. That's the danger of any spiritual teaching. But I think that the rewards possibly outweigh the dangers. If you just don't grab it too much, and if it helps you to orient a little bit about what's happening, then it's all well and good. If none of this resonates for you, if it doesn't ring a bell for you, don't worry about it. Like I said, there are people that these dark nights, they will, by whatever name you want to give them, they will experience very little, if anything. They might just be sort of blips on the radar. That's a very rare person, but it's possible. Some people experience these things with great difficulty. Great, great difficulty. And other people just, you know, medium difficulty. So it's very different for each person. You know, I always kind of think we're all on the exact same journey ultimately, but we all have very, very unique and different experiences of that. And where is the journey going? Exactly where you've always been. Funny how we have to seem or appear to go on a journey to realize we didn't go anywhere. But like I said, you can't don't take something like that and think that gets you out of it. Be true to where you are. Be true to what you're experiencing. Feel what you're being called to let go of, and feel what you're being called to let go into. Your intuition may help you. If it's a spiritual process, like I said, to feel really flat, or your affective system kind of feeling really depressed or closed down, can be natural for a while. If it's a different kind of, you know, if you feel like it's a more of a clinical kind of depression, a psychological depression, or a psychiatric depression, then get yourself some help. Get yourself some counseling. Go to a psychiatrist, go to a psychologist, talk to a good friend, whatever. But if you really feel like it's a movement of the spirit, and often your intuition is pretty good about what kind of flatness you're experiencing, if you feel intuitively like it's a movement of spirit, maybe this evening's what I've had to say has been useful. I hope so. And maybe, like I said, all you gotta have get a sense of what you're being called for now to let go of and what you're being called to move into. Don't take anything as absolute. You might let go of something now and later it becomes useful again. It's just being true to what's arising currently. So thank you for joining in with me. I hope this was useful. I hope you also got the bright side of the dark nights, because the bright side of these dark nights is that there is a real transforming spiritual energy that's informing all of these, and they're actually all examples and expressions of that transformative energy. And so it's not all dark. It's just from the ego's perspective, it's dark. From something very deep and very quiet and timeless and ageless in you, there's a beauty in it. There's actually a grace in it. So I hope you got the feeling that it's also a grace, that all these are actually movements of grace. They just don't feel like it at times. Grace meaning that combination of universal intelligence and love, right? The activity of it, the movement of it. So thank you for joining me this evening. Let me just let y'all know that I know I didn't open up the phone lines, so pardon me. Every once in a while, I want to talk about something that takes pretty much the whole program, so I hope that worked for you. If you didn't, tune in next time I have the program, and I'll probably be answering the phones. And until then, enjoy yourself. Thank you for joining me. Namaste.